Welcome to the program. I'm Michael Cohen with producer James Platy. Thank you for joining us this evening. It's a special Friday, both Good Friday and the beginning of Passover. So there you go. It is a packed show today, so let's jump right into it. The Detroit City Council finally approving the consent agreement this week and just in the nick of time. So now what? Are things likely to get any easier moving ahead? To discuss that, I'm joined by Eric Scorsone, an MSU economist who knows all about the state emergency manager law, the consent agreement, and Detroit's financial predicament. Eric, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
You know, I remember the Detroit city officials initially rejected the consent agreement. Was there ever a counterproposal presented, or did city officials just change their mind?
Yeah, the first agreement the governor presented was met with a lot of resistance, primarily due to the fact that it, in the perception of city officials, was that it was a real power grab. The city government would have been severely curtailed. And so there was a counterproposal that was worked on with the parties, and the agreement that they've actually signed is somewhat different, certainly has some important differences from the first proposal put forward.
Now, the initial proposal was that we have a nine-member financial advisory board. That is still the case. There's also a chief financial officer and a project management director. So with all those pieces in play, who's actually going to have the final say here?
Well, it's complicated, and I'm not sure. It may depend on how things play out. Certainly the intent of the agreement is to place officials in the executive branch of city government, like a chief financial officer, which they do not have now, to really be a strategic executive who's kind of monitoring the budget. The program management director is really designed to implement reforms such as changes to the lighting system. So it's really going to be a shared set of power between, you know, council and the mayor making some decisions, and then those decisions monitored and implemented by both current city officials along with these new officials that are going to be appointed.
I mean, I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of disagreements and arguments here. Is the nine-member financial advisory board, are they going to be basically voting and the majority is going to move ahead with the decision that's made?
Well, actually, under the new agreement, the financial advisory board probably has less power unless Detroit substantially breaches the agreement, and then they would be able to enact some other authorities they might have. But their role at this point is really to advise and monitor more than anything, which is different than the first proposal, which was more they had authority. I would say that council and the mayor are going to have to act, and are going to have to act quickly. There are deadlines they're going to have to meet. And so if they don't act, then there could be a shift of power to these new officials that are be appointed jointly by the state and city.
So this new consent agreement that was finally agreed to is giving Detroit officials, I guess, more time to remain in control. But as soon as they breach the agreement, it's going to go essentially to the initial consent agreement that was put in place, this nine-member board being in control.
Exactly. And I think one of the dangers when you get a proposal, this proposal is twice as long as the first one. I think the danger here is going to be the definitions of what is success, what is failure. Because you can see in how this is written, there's a lot of sort of, well, this person has to interpret this, and then it has to go to this board, and there has 30 days. And I mean, you can definitely see where there's going to be some potential real challenges in implementing this agreement, getting parties to agree. I mean, you've got a city council that's very divided on this. So I foresee some definite barriers in how this gets implemented, given the complexity of it.
By barriers, you mean it could very well quickly be interpreted that there's been a breach of the agreement and the nine-member board just takes over at that point.
Yeah, they don't quite take over completely. They can, in essence, the program management director can be given certain powers to implement reforms if city council or the mayor doesn't enact them, essentially, is what this is. So the financial advisory board would have a role to play. They certainly have some power over union contracts in particular. It isn't quite like New York City, for example, in 75, where that board, the Emergency Control Board, actually had veto power over the budget. So it, there are differences here, but of course, ultimately, you know, if there was a substantial breach of the agreement, there could be even, you know, the imposition of emergency manager, for example. But, you know, I think the goal here is to give city officials some time, but with some definite deadlines to get some things done quickly.
I'm talking to Eric Scorsone. He's an MSU economist. We're talking about the consent agreement that the Detroit City Council signed off on this week. So, Eric, one thing that did not happen is that Detroit didn't get any major cash infusion from the state, although there was a deal that involves a $137 million bond package, which should help the city stay solvent until the fiscal year ends in June. So what has to happen at that point? Will the city be out of money once again once we hit June?
Well, probably not right away, but the question I think has to be, and hopefully the new structure is going to help us get a better handle on cash flow, because, I mean, certainly the sense is that they're burning more cash than they're bringing in. So if you get an infusion of cash, I mean, that's only going to be temporary help if you continue to spend more than you bring in. So we don't really know, because honestly, financial record keeping in Detroit is not really up to par at this point. I would hope in the next few months that we would have a better sense, you know, is the city finally getting its cash flow under control? Because that's really the short-term issue, although that's not going to address its bigger long-term issues.
Let's look at the short-term issues. What do you think the first thing that's going to have to be done to address the budget issue? What do you expect officials to do starting in June, let's say, once they've got a clear idea of what the problems are?
Well, the first thing, I think the most attention will be paid to the union contracts. I mean, that's where you can save money the quickest. You know, reducing wages, reducing benefits, that hits your bottom line, you know, because you're doing a monthly or biweekly payroll. You can hit the bottom line pretty quickly. So I think those, and there's a deadline, July 16th, to get those concessions worked out. So
Does the consent agreement give the power to the mayor and the city council, though, to reformat those contracts without having to negotiate with the unions?
Exactly. It basically exempts them from the current law we have in Michigan for collective bargaining for public employees. And so they have, now they can bargain with them if they wish. They do not have to. And if they don't come up with an agreement by July, then the state, through the Financial Advisory Board, could begin to act on its own.
So is this how it'll work, where the mayor and city council will have some time to take action? If they don't, the advisory board steps in and takes that initial step, and then does it go back to the mayor and the council to make another set of decisions, and if they run out of time, the advisory board once again steps in?
Yeah, the other reforms, things like the lighting department and public safety, they don't have a clear deadline on some of those. They're really... that's going to have to be defined by the advisory board and others as to what are the deadlines, what are the criteria for success. But again, the project management director, if it's found that they're not meeting that criteria, whatever it is, the project management director could take over in that specific reform, say the lighting department. And so that's, and they would be given legislative and executive powers, almost like an emergency manager. And they would be able to implement that reform, not other reforms, just that particular one. So it's a very piecemeal approach in that sense.
Does the consent agreement have a timeline? Is there a point where it actually indicates that the process will be over?
Well, the timeline, yeah. I mean, basically, Detroit would have to either have 3 years of no deficit or 2 years consecutively of what they call an acceptable bond rating, which, again, who knows what that really means, but the first proposal, which was more specific about that. So those are the two criteria that would end this agreement, essentially.
One last thing. We have this annual budget deficit of $270 million, but there's this $12 billion total debt that the city has. How is that going to be addressed? How is that going to be approached? And is this consent agreement going to focus on this $12 billion total debt also?
Well, I think that's one of the weaknesses in the proposal. If you know, because to address the $12 billion is going to require some really extraordinary actions that may not be possible without legislative changes to other laws. And I'm not sure this agreement in and of itself isn't going to necessarily fix all that, which is really tied to retirees. And I would also say it's not just unique to Detroit. Lansing, Flint, Saginaw all have the same basic problem, which is huge legacy costs. So this is really a statewide problem. I'm not sure this consent agreement in and of itself is going to fix all of those problems.
That'll have to be addressed, I'm guessing, at some later point in time then.
Yeah, I think this is going to be mostly focused on the short and medium-term issues.
The beginning of a long financial marathon. Eric Scorsone, MSU economist. Eric, thank you very much for joining us and giving us a much better idea of what's in place here.
Sure, thank you.
And we're coming right back. I'm Michael Cohen, and this is 1320 WILS.